Hey everyone, and welcome to episode 13 of Radio Radar. It's a big week. It's Halo week. It's a Paper Mario week, and it's week before Wii U week. I'm your host, Hollander Cooper. Here with me in studio is
Lucas Sullivan. What is up?
Not much. What's up with you?
This and that. That's this, good. That, and the third.
I'm happy you found the most interesting thing to say there.
Ryan Telzenik.
Awesome. And?
Tom Agrino. So, Lucas, I noticed that you are wearing a Maple Story hoodie.
I'm
curious as to why. Of all the clothing in the world, you're like, you know what? Maple Story.
I inherited this from
you're wearing secondhand video game shirts.
Because on the back, there's a sweet demon guy.
I want to see it.
We'll describe it.
It looks like a...
It's a baby with wings.
A baby with wings and a mace.
Yes.
Wow. Okay.
And
so sweet as in he's actually caring and nice.
Cherubic, if you will.
You know, every day Lucas comes in, he's wearing a new game piece of clothing, and I'm always curious what it's going to be next time. What extra, extra large shirt are you going to be wearing tomorrow?
Some XL.
I will say that video game companies have, like, they think we're all just ridiculously fat.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're like, we could send, you know, a smaller or medium, but these guys are all fat, and therefore
what?
Extra large.
I always get mediums, and I'm pissed off because they're like... skin tight on.
I love, my favorite though is like sometimes they'll go through the extra effort, but I like when I go to a press event and look around and everyone's like, all right, everyone here looks like they wear medium or large shirts, and then every bag has 2XL.
Yeah.
They're handing you on the way out, like, here's a bag, and it's a press kit and a 2XL t-shirt with our logo.
Why are they even
and our Twitter account
2XLs? I don't even know. How many, I mean, I'm trying to think of how many game journals there are that actually are 2XL.
I know some.
I can think of a couple.
I know some.
I can think of a couple.
Like Lucas.
Like Lucas. Lucas, you're not a 2XL.
I've worn a double XL and it was like a blouse on me.
Blouse? Yeah.
And I wore it out in public and no one gave me
a nice summer dress.
Right.
Well, that's it for this episode section of critiquing Lucas's wardrobe. Be sure to tune in next week when Lucas wears a shirt for two different competing mech games on top of each other.
And we'll wear MechWarrior Online shirt.
Although, yeah, we just got these sweet ass hats that are Walking Dead themed, but all of them have stained cocks on them.
So I can say without spoiling that there's a part in the game where you're like, oh, look, it's Clementine's hat. Oh, no, there's blood on it. Dun, dun, dun. Yeah. And there's just, and it happens throughout the series. He's just like, where's Clementine? She's like, hey, I'm over here. And there, for some reason, when they sent us, we got two different ones. And the one that I got has literally a dick and balls blood stain on it. And I'm like, I'm changing it for the other one we got. Floppy dick on that
floppy
one.
Dick.
One has a dick and balls, and
one's
one has a profile.
Side profile.
One is like the
straight on
dick that you
and
see.
It's like I try my best not to say anything that can be seen as sexual harassment in the office.
Yeah.
But I was seriously like,
hey guys, look,
I was like, Sophia, I need to change this hat out because this one looks like it has a dick, and she's just like, what? And I held it up. And she's like, oh, okay, that's just an anatomical question.
Yeah.
That's fine. Top seven, written
top
by
seven.
Our own Lukey Sully.
Yes, it is I. This was a really fun one because I like villains that are, I guess, flamboyant is a word I could use there.
I think technically you could use that. You just did.
And heroes, they're sometimes, like, I like being a goody two-shoes in games, but at the same time, heroes can be kind of boring because they're like, I want to save the world.
See, I always start off thinking, like, oh, I'm going to be such an asshole. Like in Mass Effect, I'm like, oh, I'm going to go full renegade. And then when I'm in the moment, I'm like,
I'm diehard Paragon in Mass Effect.
Paragon,
so.
I
can't speak to that.
I go down the middle.
Yeah.
I just do whatever I think I would do in real life,
yeah.
Which made it super disturbing when I was playing Fallout 3. And, like, seriously, I'm like, every choice I do is, like, what would I do in this situation? Near the end of Fallout 3, I'm like, I've been trading slaves for a few hours now. That's just, apparently, at the end of the world, my first course of action is get slave collars and just fucking make some money.
I did finally watch that Louis C.K. Lincoln essay.
Oh, God, is that good?
Good.
Yeah, if you missed that. Then don't
go Google Louis C.K. SNL Lincoln.
It's great. It's so good.
It's pretty good.
So villains.
Yes. This
speaking
top
of
seven
Lincoln,
right. Is villains that we liked better than the heroes.
Lights fans.
Number seven coming in at number seven. Grand Theft Auto Vice City and Vice City Stories. Lance Vance.
Now, why Lance Vance and not the popular, more popular choice, Officer Tenpenny?
So, people also remember Officer Tenpenny as played by Samuel L. Jackson fondly because he was like a super corrupt cop.
He was as corrupt a cop. Think about how fucked up the minds at Rockstar is. They literally were like, let's just go for the gold. Let's just make it as fucked up as possible. He's essentially spitting on babies as he talks to you.
A cop that puts drugs into the community so that he may profit off of them as he turns a blind eye. But CJ is also a hero that, you know, I think I personally liked him maybe the best out of all the Grand Theft Auto
But not
heroes.
More than Lance Vance.
Yeah, so Lance Vance I like better than Tommy Vercetti, played by Ray Liotta, or Liotta?
Liotta.
Because, like, Tommy was just like, okay, I'm going to go kill these guys and get this money. Lance Vance was like, let's get this money and then do some coke.
So you like it because even though Tommy was stereotypical, mildly stoic, like Al Pacino type,
yeah,
and Lance Vance was everyone else from the 80s.
Yeah, like Lance Vance lived by the seat of his pants.
I'm sorry. Wow. I'm sorry. This is an official challenge to say that five times fast.
No, bad radio.
But he had fun with it. Yeah. Now, number six.
Handsome Jack.
We got a more recent one. Yeah, Handsome Jack from Borderlands 2.
Surprised he's not higher, to be honest. He's a very likable villain.
Maybe 2 years from now, we'll look back and we'll say, dang, Handsome Jack was
a handsome
shit.
God damn.
But, you know, he's pretty fresh in our minds now, so I didn't want to put him up too high.
You don't want to let his current status cloud our...
He's fresh, he's new, he's fun, he's exciting, but
he's
certainly
better than the heroes. Because the heroes aren't really anybody.
The heroes are just, like,
treasure hunters. Not only that, but they're painful to listen to, the shit they say.
Yeah, I mean, the heroes are basically yard trash that you would expect to just kill outright in any other game.
Like, when Axon tosses his turret, he's like, yeah, take that, douchebag. And you're like, what? Why would you say that when you're throwing a turret?
And then
like,
and then there's Handsome Jack, who every line of dialogue is the funniest video game dialogue
he's
you've
like
heard.
He's like Claptrap, but a bad guy.
Yeah.
A version of that.
Yes.
I didn't even think
not an amoral.
When I played the game at E3 last year, I played a side mission where you're just going around destroying statues. And as you're doing it, the way Handsome Jack is trying – they're Handsome Jack statues.
Yeah.
And the way he's trying to get you to stop is just by talking down to you to the point where like you're destroying a statue of him reading a book. And he's like, oh, you're just illiterate and this just angers you. Seeing somebody read, you don't understand it and your primitive mind just wants to destroy things. And I was like – God damn, this is funnier than any game I've ever played, and it's totally out of context. And he always wears a face of a guy.
Yeah, he does wear a face of a guy.
And it's creepy.
Which is apparently his own face.
That's never, I guess, really clear, because you never see what his actual face.
There is a trick to see his real face.
What?
And you can also, I learned this, get his mask as like a lootable item.
You can wear it yourself.
That's pretty crazy. Right. So you can be impersonating the villain as the hero.
But it still doesn't make sense why he would be wearing his own face as a mask.
He's that vain.
I mean...
He's just that vain.
Well, wouldn't
he's
that make it that so obsessed. His face wouldn't age?
But how would he cut somebody else? Did he have like a twin brother that he cut the face off?
I'm thinking he doesn't have a face under there. It's just...
I thought it was the Borderlands sign.
Maybe it's not so much like a skin mask as it is like a porcelain replica of his own face somehow. I don't know.
There are lots of options. All of them...
That needs to be explored.
All of them. Every one of these questions is answered by... That's the reason he's one of the greatest villains that is better than a hero.
Yeah. Now, number five, Kane a fan favorite cult classic, if you will, from the Command & Conquer series.
Hmm.
Now, this is like Joseph D. Kukin, I believe.
Okay.
He has played him in every game that Kane has appeared, and I think he holds the world record for longest
looking exactly the same.
That too. Most preserved facial features. No. He has the record for longest portrayal
of a character.
Of a character.
A video game. Yeah, he's played the same character since like the 90s.
Since day.
Was Kane in Command & Conquer Renegade?
I don't believe
so. I'm pretty sure he was out. He didn't play.
It was
in
all
one
the
of
FMV
them. I can't
stuff.
Remember. Which I feel like it was within the last 5 years they left him out of one. I can't remember which one. I could be completely wrong. I remember
I think
there
you
being
might be.
A lot of out. Of
he was in four
because he was missing for some reason.
So I believe he's like there's two Command & Conquer series: Red Alert and like the Tiberian Sun modern
right,
day.
Right, the Tiberian.
I think he was in mostly Tiberian, although he may pop up in Red Alert because he is like basically immortal. And I didn't even know that.
Isn't he like a devil, like a demon or something?
He's
also?
Like an alien that came to Earth and he found us when we were Neanderthals. And he was like, these stupid idiots. And then he said, I'm going to rule these
people. I'm going to F with you a lot.
And the only reason he's not higher on the list is because Command & Conquer 4 was
not the greatest.
Such a bad game that his entire reputation as a character was tarnished.
Well, it's like when
the last level is just literally just or the last like last few cinematics are just like they're just like we don't even feel like doing a set white room. They're just like a bunch of white room scenes in that game.
It's like Raul Julia doing M. Bison in Street Fighter, and then he died. It's like that sucks.
Tragic.
Yeah, and Command & Conquer may be on ice, as it were.
Yeah, that game did bad.
But anyways, number four, this one was highly contested by the commenters, and I could see why Albert Wesker from Resident Evil would be polarizing.
Yep.
Some people think he's too, like, his voice is annoying, he's
emo.
Too like dapper almost, I guess you could say. But other people are like, this guy's amazing because he's basically Neo, but a bad guy, and he insults you while you're punching him and not hurting him at all.
He is the only, like, think about how many villains seem to, their lives revolve around the hero. He is so tired of your bullshit. Like, at any point, isn't there a line where he's like, I have this much time to give you, and then I'm just leaving?
And then it's like, peace out after that, because you're nothing compared to me. Like, that's just cool.
Even though you can punch the shit out of a boulder, you still can't do anything to me.
You can't wear sunglasses quite like Albert Wesker.
No.
So, yeah, and spoiler alert, when his death scene, he's in lava, like, screaming. That's not enough to kill him. You have to fire not one, but two rocket launchers at him while he's submerged in lava.
After he's already been essentially, like, killed in every game. He's never completely killed.
He may come back. Who knows?
That's exciting.
Then we got number three. Sephiroth.
Did you just put this on here for fan service?
No, this is legit. I think Sephiroth is one of the coolest villains out there. And then compared to Cloud, who's Cloud's like vanilla.
Who am I? I don't know.
You're never sad to get vanilla, but it's just not exciting, you know?
Yeah, I guess so.
I like vanilla if I can put stuff in it.
Okay.
Like spiky yellow hair and an oversized sword.
But Sephiroth has the villainy clout, as I like to say, because he killed Aerith. Like, what the heck, man?
Yeah, he doesn't.
Why
he doesn't fuck around.
Do that?
Think about how many villains in games there are that never actually do anything villainous. They just plan to.
He did it, and then he like didn't even care. He's like, what?
That's
what are
what
you
I
gonna
was,
do?
What were you expecting? This is what the end game was. Me murdering somebody.
And just when you think he's dead, no, he'll just possess somebody in Advent Children. And literally force their body to take his shape and just come back to life, just like that. Not even a big deal.
Advent Children was fucking terrible.
Yeah, the movie
God, it was so bad.
It was amazing. No sense. It was amazing.
I saw it. I didn't even. Was Sephiroth in that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He was.
I didn't even know what was going on.
He was like in the entire last third.
I don't even know why that movie was made.
Because it's awesome.
I figure with the amount of time it took to make that, they totally could have done the reboot or the remake.
I feel like nobody got it because, like, the thing that Final Fantasy does a lot is they'll just be like, all right, this is a Final Fantasy game that is completely different than every other Final Fantasy universe. And that was what they did with the movie, and so people went in thinking, like, all right,
You're thinking Spirits Within.
You totally are thinking Spirits Within.
Oh, yeah,
you're
thinking
the wrong movie.
They made a Final Fantasy VII
that movie was bad.
Movie,
oh, did they?
Which was also terrible.
Oh. No.
I'd rather watch Spirits Within.
No, no way. No way.
Again, just to see if it was as bad, because I think I saw it in a theater.
I watched it recently. It turns out it's still just as bad as you thought it was.
Oh, really?
My favorite thing about that was like Square was like, we're making an entire movie studio to make movies, and then that one movie did so bad that they were like, just kidding.
Pull the plug, as it were.
Goodbye.
Well, Sephiroth is kind of interesting too, just because he thought he was like this human-born dude, and then he's like, oh, I was actually a genetic experiment.
Genova.
So that kind of sucks. And then he just decides to try and destroy the planet. But
basically, like, him and Cloud are on the same level of power, but he is just like, I'm going to be a jerk to everyone and not care.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
Number two.
Number one.
A lot of people said this should be number one, but we'll get to that in a second. GLaDOS from Portal 1 and 2.
Yes.
Now, I mean,
Doesn't get better.
What can be said about GLaDOS
that hasn't already been said?
What can you say about GLaDOS that I haven't screamed during sex? Is what you're asking.
Where's the cake?
Oh, no.
She's so, like, mean to you. But at the same time, she's sort of your buddy as you're playing the game.
You never know if she's being mean to you in a genuine sense or mean to you like a boxing trainer is like, you can hit harder than
that. Oh, it's definitely genuine. She hates her guts.
But at the same time,
she's the overconfident villain.
Or is she trying to force you to set her free?
I think she's just like the overconfident villain that's like, ha-ha, you're not going to do anything. Doesn't matter how much
and
you
I love
try.
How, like, I remember when, when Portal came out, I would talk to my friends, and they'd be like, yeah, it was really good. I got, like, halfway through. And I'm like, you don't even know what Portal is then. Wow. Because, like, Portal is fun. It's a good game. And the last level, which is essentially the length of half the game, is when all of a sudden, that's when GLaDOS becomes a character. That's when she's like, I am done pretending to be a robot.
Effing around.
Yeah.
Yeah, good stuff. Mm-hmm. And then last but not least, in fact, most, we got Andrew Ryan from Bioshock 1 mainly, although he does cameo in 2. And
mostly in robot form.
Yeah, mostly in self-made theme park form. But he is one of the few villains that you don't really fight him, and yet he sort of like torments you the whole time and keeps you running along on the string, and you think he's the bad guy. He is the bad guy, but not really.
Bad guy.
Yeah,
he's a very bad guy.
You understand why he's doing what he's doing, and if things wouldn't have gone so horribly wrong,
maybe he would never be a hero.
Say what you will about people who want to live that kind of Ayn Rand-inspired awful life. That's not villainous in and of itself. And the actual creation of Rapture it wasn't like he was trying to create he was just trying to be like, I don't like that world. So instead of walking around and trying to preach my political views on other people, I'm just going to leave and make my own world. So he leaves and does that. And it's not until people try to tear his world apart that he's actually forced to become a villain.
I don't think people try to tear his world apart. It's like the world that he's creating is creating a situation in which that is the only outcome
It wasn't meant to be.
Well, sort of, but at the same time, it's like his world literally gets torn apart because they find the slugs at the bottom of the ocean that give you superpowers.
Right.
Like, they find Adam, that's what creates an arms race between rival industries. And without that, I mean, things weren't great in Rapture.
I don't know. I mean, I feel like Adam was just like the thing, the stand-in. It could have been anything that would have created this conflict.
I don't know. I think one of the reasons that I like Andrew Ryan so much is because I think he's politically misguided, but I feel as though he doesn't become a villain until really late in his life. He doesn't become a villain until he is forced to be villainous.
Yeah.
The actual creation of Rapture, I don't believe to be an inherently villainous thing.
He was sort of backed into a corner, and then he's sort of alone in a world full of drug addicts, basically.
When he created Rapture, he basically had the same mentality as Hitler.
Well, no, because that would be like if Hitler didn't go create a bunker in the middle of the ocean. He was like, this place I'm in is going
to
be.
Right, but he had that same mentality of, I need to get rid of all of the undesirables.
No, he said, I want to move somewhere where there aren't any
undesirables. I want my society to have no undesirables in it.
I don't know. I'm
just going to kill everybody around me. And Andrew Ryan was like, I'm going to go
to my own
make
pad.
My own thing under the sea.
I consider those to be consider them to be two very different means to an end. One of them is villainous, and one of them is just heavily misguided.
And I think we can all agree that Jack is boring as shiz.
Oh yeah.
Although me and Coop did do a really good impression of my parents told me I was going to make something of myself. You know what? They were right. Goof, 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 goof.
I was wondering what was going to bring to the equation, but now I know.
I think 2K should hire us to do the Bioshock Infinite.
It's not too late. Just redo all the sound effects.
we've heard there's some problems. Amazing. Bring in the fixers.
Also, I believe that you and I are probably disagreeing with Andrew Ryan because one of us in the room did not read the book written about Andrew Ryan, and one of us read the first 30 or so pages.
And said, I am awesome for reading this.
Wait, what?
There's a Bioshock book that's a prequel Rapture. Book explaining the creation of Rapture.
Oh, is well, I read Atlas Shrugged, so.
Whoa. Okay, that's pretty
which
intense.
Which is the book.
All right, well, then you're the villain in this equation.
Is Ayn Rand legit, like,
no, that
nutso?
Chick is crazy.
Okay, because I heard some people are like, no, there's validity to her arguments, but is she fracking?
Listen,
nuts?
Man, yeah, railroads. railroads. Listen, let's just also go see the movie.
Okay, I can do that.
No, let's not do that.
Okay.
Atlas Shrugged, is that a movie?
Yeah, they made it into a 2-part movie. If you watch the first trailer, it's awesome because it's just a bunch of people dressed in current day attire yelling about railroads. And I'm just I have no fucking idea.
There's a really weird S&M element to Atlas Shrugged, which I was not aware of.
Are you sure you weren't reading 50 Shades of Grey?
I'm pretty sure, yeah.
Shades of Atlas.
We got the community choice, which I was on the fence about this one, but you know what? I'm going to go with it. The Joker is better than Batman in the Arkham games. What do you think about that? Mark Hamill's Joker, which
Mark Hamill's Joker is
gained
good.
Fame and notoriety.
I mean, the problem is I feel like Batman is a good character in that game.
Yeah.
And he's not bad enough. There's not that much of a discrepancy between
There's not a gap.
Yeah, right.
But the Joker is like what keeps the whole thing moving along. And did you ever do in Arkham Asylum like the weird TV room where it was all the Joker mannequins and a little TV like where their head should be? It's a completely optional thing where it's just the Joker like messing with you by telling you all these short stories that are like disturbing as heck. Mm-hmm. And you can go through the game without even getting to them.
Yeah, I don't think I got to.
Pretty intense stuff.
What
villain
I'm not,
like
I'm not
strings you along like that?
He is a good villain.
He is a great villain. That laugh. Oh my God, that laugh.
Yeah, that laugh was great. 20 years earlier.
Your problem with this would be...
And you'll notice on our... since I run the top sevens, or at least they usually get run through me in some way. You're not going to see many movie, cartoon, or comic book characters make it into them unless that's the point of them.
No.
Because Mark Hamill's Joker was a great cartoon character that translated to a pretty good video game character. But without that cartoon and without 50 years of comic books, the Joker wouldn't have been that impressive of a video game villain. You went in with expectations of the Joker being a strong villain.
Oh, that's a good point.
And, yeah, he did good. He's Mark Hamill. That's the voice you expect to hear at this point. But I don't feel like it actually added anything to the character. Same with people who are like, why isn't Batman on your list of top heroes? It's like, because he's a comic book character.
He's been around since the 40s.
That did all right in a video game. But
we should find someone who's never read a Batman comic and doesn't know who he is and say, play Arkham Asylum and see.
He's still a good character, but he's not a video game character. That's a compelling reason why. I mean, he does do some really twisted shit that has nothing to do with the comics and the games.
So Mark Hamill Joker, Heath Ledger Joker, or Jack Nicholson Joker. Is it Nicholas or Jack Nicholson?
Nicholson.
Okay, got it right. One's a golfer. One is a Joker.
Who's the guy that did him in the cartoon and dressed really weird? Not the cartoon, the old TV show.
Yeah, I don't know.
Him.
Oh God, what's his name?
We're not doing this. I'm gonna go with specifically video game Joker, just to pretend.
I'm doing the Heath Ledger Joker.
He was pretty darn good. Pretty darn
what about you, Ryan? Quick answer.
Hamill.
Hamill.
Yeah, I'm gonna.
He's
go with
Luke
him.
Skywalker.
Oh. That's what makes him so amazing.
Yeah, that range, man.
Oh, man, I so hope Luke Skywalker comes back in the new Star Wars movie.
I hope he comes back, and they're like, listen, you need to come back in the new Star Wars, but you have to do Joker voice.
I'm pretty sure that's the only voice he has at this point.
No, he did. He did Wolverine.
Hard living.
He plays Skips in a regular show. I want him to do Skips voice. All right, so that's it for the top seven. When we get back, we're going to talk about brand new Grand Theft Auto 5 news.
Plus, with a Henry Gilbert, without a Tom.
Go home, Tom. All right, we'll be right back. All right, and we're back. Second segment, going to talk about Grand Theft Auto, going to talk about Uncharted, and going to talk about South Park and some other stuff. Let's start off with the biggest news of the week. Obviously, Uncharted 5 information finally revealed after essentially a year of nothing.
I haven't heard of Uncharted 5, actually.
Grand Theft Auto 5! Listen, Lucas, if you're, I know this is a visual gag.
Yeah.
Up to here with your nonsense.
Yeah, GTA 5. There basically been nothing revealed about the game since the trailer last year in around the same time. But our good friends at Game Informer, they got the big cover reveal for it and had 18 pages of information, which I scoured over and
condensed for you guys in a much shorter feature that's, you know, doesn't cost you any money.
And it's free.
If
yeah.
I may
yeah.
say.
And I mean, and if you watched the trailer last year, you saw, you know, there was plenty of speculation. Was the guy running from the cops the main character? Was the older guy? Was the other guy? And the answer is all of them.
It was all of them. I didn't think they'd do three at a time. So, yeah, much like GTA 4, which in its overarching story, if you count the DLC episodes, did have three main characters, so does GTA 5, except you play as them simultaneously. You can switch near, this isn't actually the direct quote, but they implied you could switch almost all the time. Not all the time, but almost all the time. You can switch between the characters. And so the three are Michael. He's the one who did the voiceover in the first trailer, the older gentleman talking about, you know, having kids and getting back into the game. He's been in witness protection for the past few years, and now he's looking to make some big money again.
I saw – I'm not going to completely steal this, but I think it was somebody from Joystick tweeted like, oh, thank God, a Grand Theft Auto about a former gangster getting back into it. I've been waiting for that for years. Oh, so happy.
And so then second, we have his good buddy, his old friend Trevor, who is a really fucked up sounding dude who lives in the deserts, hangs around with bikers and meth heads, and he has a tattoo across his neck with a dotted line that says, cut here.
Wow.
Interesting. And,
he seems to be the – he was also described as one of the interesting things about the game. He poured a bunch of gasoline from a car – and then stopped, and then down the street lit a lighter, dropped the lighter on the gasoline, and it blew up a car. And so
that's something you can do in the game now.
Yeah, it's just something you can do in the game now. And then the third guy is Franklin. He is a young man in his early 20s.
Not to be confused with the turtle Franklin who learns to tie his shoes and zip zippers.
That's correct.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
So anyway, he's just getting into the world of crime, and he's inexperienced and young, but full of vim and vigor.
Does he have a connection to the other two dudes?
No, their connection wasn't described as much, but they end up getting into business together. A lot. It sounds like they were really inspired by the three-leaf clover mission in GTA 4, because it says there's going to be more than just one multi-tiered heist type level in it. I think.
My least favorite mission in GTA 4.
I liked that mission, but I wouldn't want to do more than three of them in one game.
I just didn't like it because that whole game let you pretty much play the whole thing without killing cops, and then that's literally a mission where the mission is to kill all the cops. Like, you can pretty much play through just killing gangsters and avoiding killing cops, which I did. And then it's like, hey, we really liked Heat. So here you go.
This sounds even more like Heat.
That's fine. Well, at least it's built from the ground up to be about scumbags.
Yeah, that's true. And so also another big important thing about the game is how huge it is. The game only takes place in Los Santos. You don't go to multiple cities like you did in San Andreas. But Los Santos is bigger than the combined real estate of Red Dead, Grand Theft Auto 4, and San Andreas.
Jesus Christ.
That's how big it is. And they say that it's like, that includes military bases, deserts, and wilderness in between city, or between like boroughs, and even the underwater, the ground floor of the ocean.
Like, I understand the bigger is better approach, but I wonder if that's too, like, is that just too much?
I bet you they're just going to.
That's like a lot of empty space.
Yeah, I bet you there's just going to be a lot of areas that in the past games you would just kind of speed through are probably just going to have some mini game stuff in there. Hopefully bowling.
And in real life, L.A. is such a sprawling place anyway. Like, they're just being true to life. Like, it's, L.A. is like 10 cities patchworked together.
See, and I think my issue with it is, like, if they, like, why not just have, like, four different cities that are totally different? Like, are the suburbs of L.A. really going to be more interesting than Vegas would be?
No, likely not more interesting than Vegas.
Not only that, but if I have to drive a car from one mission to someplace 20 minutes away, I'd rather jump off a cliff.
That's why those three guys are a good, that helps with that, because they're going to be, until they come together for their own mission, and you apparently will switch between them during missions, too. When they're all together, but they're spread out across the city. When you play as Michael, you'll be on like the complete other side of town than Trevor, and you'll just jump into Trevor's body then instead, and that'll get you to the other side of town without having to hail a cab and pay $5 and wait 30 seconds for it to load up the next area. And also, you know, another interesting part is when you jump from dude to dude, they're living their lives when you're not them. And so they'll be in a different place than you left them because time doesn't stop for them when you're not playing them.
That's kind of crazy. Will they be doing criminal activities? Like,
well, in the story, the example they gave was jumping from Michael into Trevor while Trevor was on the toilet. So.
Exciting, realistic poops.
He was complaining about how horrible this current poop was. So yeah, GTA 5, and there's going to be a new it's out in spring, which I take to mean May.
Yeah.
And it's going to there's going to be a new trailer next week on the 14th.
Yeah. Okay. Really looking forward to it. But that said, if you remember GTA 4, none of the trailers showed actual, I mean they were all in engine, but none showed gameplay. Mm-hmm. So don't expect don't expect to see what GTA is going to look like for at least another like 8 months.
Am I the only one that has a problem? Like, I've yet to even come close to finishing a GTA game because I drive around in cars for an hour and then I stop playing them forever.
Yeah, see, yeah, that's the total wrong way to play GTA. How I played them until GTA 4. But on GTA 4, I focused enough.
Same here.
And that was the one I went all through the entire story of.
I got most of the way through San Andreas, and then I never played much of I played a lot of 3, but in 3 I literally – it was just a murder simulator.
Yeah.
Yeah.
San Andreas I played like 3/4 of and then got bored of the plot because it got kind of boring to me. And 4 was the first one that I'm like, I care enough about these characters. So I beat that and all the DLC. But honestly, take advantage of like taxis because in GTA 4, yeah, if you drive from one end of the city to the other, you're going to kill a lot of people in between. But if you just take a cab there, you can just do missions for when you don't feel like messing around.
About halfway through, I was just like, screw it. I'm just taking a cab.
It's one of those games I keep meaning to go back and actually give an actual shot, just like focus on the missions. Maybe I can do that.
Well, you'll never have time. So you'll never have time.
Never. Well, you can't. There's no way you can possibly do anything but fail, so stop.
Just move on to GTA 5. Play a lot of that when it comes out.
All right.
Other big news story, though obviously not as big as new GTA news, Uncharted Fight for Fortune appeared on one of those like Australian classification sites, and for the first day no one knew what it was, and now we still don't know, but it's probably going to be, it's made by a developer that makes a lot of like the any genre, any PlayStation exclusive franchise that has had a random PSN game in the last 4 years, they're the ones that have made it.
This says to me that that Naughty Dog has kind of moved on past Uncharted,
Sony hasn't.
Yeah, where Naughty Dog's like, hey, Sony, have fun with it. We won't stop you, but we're working on our new trilogy.
Yeah, in the classification, there was an update that said it's going to have some card/casino elements, which could mean it's just 100% just like Uncharted poker.
Oof, or it could just. I hope not.
Well, no, look at the name, Fight for Fortune.
There's no way.
if anything, it sounds like a casino.
Now that it sounds more like a multiplayer game. Like it's just going to be multiplayer only adventure,
like Mass Effect multiplayer.
Or maybe it'll be like some games have had modes where you like as you kill enemies, you get cards. Like trying to factor in some kind of casino elements. Those have been cool. I've played those before. If I'm putting down my bet right now, I'm saying I'm going all in on it just being a straight up card / casino game.
Damn it.
I bet it's just more multiplayer, just a multiplayer only game for PSN. I'm just, this just reconfirms for me that after Uncharted 3, I was cool with, I can take a break from Uncharted for a while.
Yeah.
Other big news.
This is really big news.
So the awesome-looking South Park, The Stick of Truth, which is one of my most anticipated games right now.
Right.
The incredibly cool-looking Company of Heroes 2.
Yep.
And I know you're excited for Metro Last Light because it looks fantastic. All delayed.
Not a good sign.
Across the board.
THQ is in a lot of trouble right now. They really are. Like, we made fun of them before, but this is, maybe not made fun of them. We mentioned it before, but this is.
This does not bode well.
Yeah.
Boding well is not what this does.
Well, also, not too long ago, just a few weeks, within the last couple weeks, Joe Mad of the president of Vigil Games that makes the Darksiders, he left. He quit the company, Which says to me, he was told, you're not making any more Darksiders games.
Yeah. So, which is a shame because I seriously love that series.
Well, the 2 wasn't a big... It sold well, but not blockbuster.
See, that's the thing is, like, recently all of the... Like, I'm seeing all of these games sell really well and then the companies that made them close anyway. So I'm sort of confused as to what's going on in the gaming industry right now.
Well, they probably just spend a lot to
I think there is a problem in the game industry that, like, Darksiders should... Like, it sold... Let's say it sold 2 million. I think it's around that number. Like, 2 million should be a profitable game, but it's not profitable enough to save THQ. They need something that sells like Call of Duty does, and they aren't going to get that. Like, and South Park wasn't going to be that, and Company of Heroes and definitely not Metro were going to be that either. those are going to be great. I think those will both have a good chance of being really good, but... They're just not going to be. And now that they delayed them past their, like, March, it really just sounds like they can't afford to publish them.
Well, or, it was, like, during that earnings call, too, right? Like, that's what that call was.
Oh, yeah. The other thing about that earnings call was they have this, like, earnings call where they go, we've delayed everything that's about to come out, and now it's time for the Q&A. No Q&A. Hang up, click, the
and
end.
Then their stock immediately dropped by 50%,
like, which immediately. Can't afford to.
Well,
like,
it was the stock was less than $2, and then it dropped by 50%.
Oh God!
See, the thing I'm hoping is that they pushed those games back because they knew they couldn't compete because of how crazy. Because these were all supposed to come out within the first 3 months of next year.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that it was like, you know what? There's like, you're having Dead Space 2, BioShock Infinite, Tomb Raider, DMC. Yeah. Like, there's three, like, big games every month for the next 4 months. After.
Games like Crysis 3 are getting forgotten in that. Like, so do you guys remember that Crysis 3 is coming
point.
Out next year too?
I'm hoping that they're just going to start dropping them like March, throw out 2 of them.
Honestly, yeah. At this point, I just hope that they still happen. Like,
yeah, this South Park game, it's like, I am so excited. It looks amazing, and I'm like 50% sure it's going to be outright canceled.
They've done enough with it. I bet they'll just sell it to somebody. Like,
and you'd think, like, Company of Heroes 2 is just, like, so close. Like, there's no way.
Yeah.
That they'll oh, just shit, be Bethesda like, should buy it. They've already worked with Obsidian.
Yeah, they've worked with Obsidian enough. Why not?
And the bummer thing about THQ, like, if THQ goes away, it's like, but they have such, of like, admittedly very niche developers, but they make such important games for the genres that they develop for. Like, Relic makes crazy good RTS
games.
Well,
it's just really sad that they finally, this year was when they had, like, such a quality slate of games.
Yeah.
Like, after they'd kind of been, like, hit or miss at best for so many years. Like, they starting with Saints Row up till now, they put out a lot of really good games.
Yeah.
But
well, they had just taken on so much, a lot of which just did not pay off and hurt them very.
And there's also some of those games, like the UFC games, after the first one, they didn't sell, despite getting better with every iteration.
Yeah.
So
that's why they sold it.
Yeah. So THQ, send it a get well card, I guess, is where I'm going with this.
You could buy Darksiders, I guess, if you really want.
Just buy a few dozen copies. Yeah. I mean, give them to everyone you know.
The holiday season is coming.
Yeah. I'm telling you right now, I'm buying you 12 copies of Darksiders 2.
I would be ecstatic if you did that.
Okay.
I would bet they're down to 30 or 40 right now.
It's okay. Yeah. It's okay. It'll be all right. They'll pull through. Moving on to previews, we got our Wii U in. We're not allowed to talk about that much stuff. What are we allowed to talk about, Hank? We unboxed it.
We opened it up and
played with the gamepad for the first time without it being tethered to stuff. Mm-hmm. Can we talk about this a little bit?
Yeah. It's very different finally to have it like untethered. Like that's very interesting.
Putting it in the charging cradle and everything.
Mm-hmm. And it also made me I'm sad I won't have I'll only have the basic. We got the premium model and didn't get to enjoy the basic model yet.
Poor people model, I believe is being called. And I'm not making fun. I'm just saying that's the official name Nintendo is going by.
But we also, you know, you finally got a chance to play New Mario U for a good amount of
time.
Can
I talk about what I think I'm allowed to talk about that?
In a preview aspect, yeah, you can.
So,
pretend, yeah.
Yeah, so I played a little bit of it. Played it with my fiancé. So the game has a mode where you can tap the touchscreen to put blocks on the screen to help your teammate.
Mm-hmm.
That's not
what it does.
No, that is what it technically could do. Depends on the person you're playing. If you have
dynamic.
If the person you live with happens to, for some reason, get a god complex when she holds the controller and say, I'm playing Bowser's Minion, it's a rough time. It essentially turns the game into like a spelunky-like Ninja roguelike.
But think of it this way.
Think about a game like Ninja Gaiden, except when you're jumping over something, there's a chance that a wall will literally appear in front of you and knock you into a pit. Or if you're small Mario, which means you're but one hit away from dying, and you have the boss but one hit away from dying, and you go to jump on his head, a block could appear above you, ricocheting you into the enemy and killing you. Also, hitting people, like violently hitting them, you can get arrested for that. So you can't even do that when that happens. You just have to sit there frowning.
I mean, you can go to jail. It's fine.
I think I probably should have.
Not until you've written a few more reviews.
Yeah, I got to take care of the review rush, and then I will murder
get incarcerated.
But I'm letting you know that if you're the kind of person who likes to troll people, that mode looks like it's built for you and not for helping.
Yeah. No, it is a lot. It is a lot of fun, and also I do like playing on the. Well, I like being able to put this what's on the TV on the gamepad in single player. Though after a little while, I say to myself, "Why aren't I just playing a 3DS, or a Vita?"
Yeah,
but it is fun, and you also got a chance to play Nintendo Land some.
The main thing I can say about Nintendo Land without actually talking about stuff that I don't think I'm allowed to talk about, because it's something I noticed at a review. When I noticed it when I saw it at events, but I now got a better chance to see it. That game is fucking beautiful. Nintendo knows how to stylize graphics in HD. In terms of, the graphics themselves are minimalistic, but it almost looks like if Apple was developing games in terms of just, the environments, the way they use bloom lighting and just lighting in general. It looks, even though the graphics are probably maybe a little better than what you're getting on 360, it looks so high res,
Yeah, on your own TV, the Wii U games in general look better than they do in most demo environments.
Yeah, it looks and looking at that made me just go crazy about what Nintendo's going to be able to do with this thing. Just imagining Nintendo making a Mario game in HD
or a Zelda.
It finally set in a Zelda in HD. How Nintendo's style can adapt to anything. I got super excited. And the mini games were fine. They're Nintendo mini games are fine.
Yeah. So yeah, you're gonna start seeing our reviews coming up not too long from now.
Yeah, within the next week or two, and a lot of other features very soon.
Very exciting.
And one of the games that you might see a review for kind of soon is a game called Scribblenauts Unlimited, which Henry actually played recently.
That is true. So the as you'll hear a little later. The creator of Scribblenauts, Jeremiah, last name withheld, is came in.
You're going to notice a weird audio glitch, and it's because I had to make some edits in the beginning because of the guy's having a hard to pronounce last name.
So he came by to show off Scribblenauts Unlimited, the third Scribblenauts game, and as was the case with Super Scribblenauts, the step from game to game is crazy, in how much you can do, The last time it was, adding adjectives like a giant thing, a small thing. But now it's way more insane. The level of customization you can do, it's almost like you're making a game, you're programming actions and behaviors to characters. You're telling them what to hate. You're telling them how to attack things, how much health they have. It's nuts how much you can build in it.
So, Fifth Cell is eventually going to create the next Unreal Engine.
Yeah.
Just by, iterating on this to the point where it's going to be what do you want, shooter? All right, just write shooter, and you're literally halfway
space
there.
Space
shooter.
Space Marine. Bald Space Marine. Red armor. Plasma rifle. All right, I just made Halo. What?
And one of the coolest things I saw that he explains in the interview was the Nintendo cameos they lined up. They said, he points out that they are the first U.S. company, a third-party lent Nintendo characters other than the NBA Street game, the EA. Other than that,
I forgot about that.
What about SSX?
All right, maybe, 3. Okay, I guess technically SSX counts too, but those came out pretty close together.
Yeah.
But anyway, he's there. In the game, you can write up Mario appears, Luigi, Super Mushroom, Fire Flower.
And you can write adjectives also.
Well,
what happens if you write sexy Mario?
That's,
I know you tried it. I know it was the first thing you tried.
That would have been my thought, but this was the point he brought up was that the sacrifice they had to make to be allowed Mario is Nintendo outlawed adjectives. Mario is simply Mario.
Can you kill him?
Yeah, Mario.
Can he be eaten by Cthulhu?
Well, yeah, so he summons Mario, then he summons Bowser. Bowser is much more powerful than Mario and rips him to shreds.
Did you try sexy Bowser?
Again, you can't. You can give Mario a super mushroom and he'll grow, and you can give him fire flower and he'll get fire power up.
What about Super Mario? Would that make a big Mario?
I don't know. I should have tried.
Why didn't you ask
you
any of these things?
When I, he also handed Zelda characters too. Like the one of the coolest tricks was here's Link. He then summons Zelda, types in Zelda, then he types in Sheik, and Sheik makes Zelda disappear because they can't be in the same area together. And then he types out Ocarina, the blue Ocarina shows up. Link plays it, and Epona appears. And he just sits on Epona. And you can type out Triforce. Triforce then appears, and Link will go to the Triforce because he's programmed to like the Triforce. He picks it up, and then nothing happens power-wise, but then you hear da-na-na-da.
Nice. What about could you make Mario ride Epona?
Yeah, you can pick up and drop Mario on Epona.
Could Santa ride Epona?
Too bad you can't make Epona have Mario as its upper body. That would be amazing.
A centaur Mario.
A centario. Cent Mario.
Also, they showed off a pretty neat multiplayer mode where the person with the gamepad plays as the red-headed dude who's the main character.
It's a rooster hat. It's not a redhead. His name's Maxwell.
Maxwell. So Dorian. Somebody plays as Maxwell.
I have a hat of that.
Then the other guys, he can make up anything appear, and then if you point the Wii remote at it, the second, third, or fourth player points the Wii remote at it, they become that. So, he made Giant Nerd, and I played as Giant Nerd and ran around. He's like, and now look, I'll give you some wings. And he put wings on me, and I was like, well, I can fly. And I got a gun, and then I could shoot him with my gun. And
I'm picturing this in real life.
So you just added wings to Henry.
Henry meets.
It was just a really cool way of having multiplayer in the game. So I was really impressed with Scribblenauts Unlimited. And the game, technically, you can buy the Wii U game next week on the 12th, I believe it is. Like, it'll just be out on shelves, and you can buy it and stare at it and think about what a great disc it'll be.
You can open it, taste it maybe.
I like the Wii U discs have very rounded edges.
I noticed that today. I was like, why are these so smooth?
Because it's a proprietary disc. It's not a Blu-ray and it's not a DVD.
Interesting. What's the storage capacity on one of those?
I believe it is 25 gigaroonies.
God damn.
Nice. So we have an interview with the developer. What's his name, Henry?
Jeremiah. What name was that?
All right. So here's the quick interview and we'll be right back with reviews.
Hi, everybody. This is Henry Gilbert here with
Jeremiah
Schwarzman. Yes, from Fifth Cell. And we just did a little demo of their upcoming Scribblenauts Unlimited. So just a quick pitch. What is the game exactly?
So Scribblenauts came out in 2009, and the kind of premise was that you could write anything and it would come to life. So any object you could possibly think of, for those who understand or don't know, you could write zombie and it would actually work, and a zombie would go attack other people and make them zombies, or you could write jet plane and you could ride in it, or you could write gun and shoot things. Literally any object you could do or you could write, it would come to life. So the sequel in 2010 was Super Scribblenauts, and that had adjectives where you could write things like super fast or giant or yellow or pregnant, like anything, any kind of crazy adjective. And then in Scribblenauts Unlimited, which is coming out in a few weeks for the Wii U, 3DS, and PC, you can actually create your own objects now. And share them online via Nintendo's network or through Steam Workshop on PC.
Mm. And I know the Unlimited is coming out launch day with the Wii U. When's it coming to PC? Have you guys?
So it's actually not coming launch day. It's actually coming November 13th.
What?
So before launch.
Wow.
Yes. Yeah, so you could get it and
just admire it for 5 days
at night. Yeah. And PC is November 20th. So a couple days after. Yeah.
That's cool. And so I know on the, as we just, I mean, you just showed me on the Nintendo version, there's several Nintendo characters that like make a cameo, and it was this something like you'd wanted to do in the previous entries in the series?
Well, I wouldn't say in the previous entries, but it was something that we've been talking with Nintendo for a while, and it just made sense on the Wii U for the Wii U's launch and stuff. But kind of just as a game player, like just being able to work with Nintendo's IP is just super awesome. We're actually, as far as I understand, the second game. Second Western game ever to have Nintendo IP in it, the first being NBA Street.
Yeah, I remember that one.
Yeah, with the basketball because that made a lot of sense. and so this mix, it's a really kind of a perfect mix because we kind of looked at the Paper Mario style and it's kind of similar to Scribblenauts style in a way. And so just the art kind of lined up. And then we also had Zelda IPs, so we kind of made our own Paper Zelda style, which is really cool.
Yeah, I really liked it. And it's not just well, it's not just the characters, though, too. It's items from the games as well. Like, I saw you pulled out the mushroom for Super Mario and the fire flower, too. Like, was it hard to narrow down which, like, items you wanted to put in the game?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot. We really wanted, both us and Nintendo wanted the same thing of quality over quantity. So it's like, it's great to have tons and tons of objects and even obscure stuff. But the problem with that is that, like, you know, it just takes time and effort, right? So we were like, let's just make everything look good, feel good, react well. Like, one little cool thing is Link. If you write Link, you can give him a Hylian.
I think it's Hylian.
Hylian, right. Hylian shield. And Master Sword, and you can even give him Ocarina. And if he plays, once you give him the Ocarina, he plays Epona's song, and then Epona actually poofs into existence and he rides Epona. So just little things like that. Like, that took some time and effort to, you know, to, like, make it all kind of mash together and merge together. So we wanted to make it like the cool objects and the cool stuff than really like everything possible.
Though, like, you could summon the Master Sword, and can anybody like use it in the game? And the Triforce too? Or?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. The Triforce, and like Link will do the specific, like, raise it above his head and go do 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 do, you know, that kind of stuff. But anybody can kind of play with that stuff. Anybody can ride Epona. You could fight Bowser again. There's also Yoshis. You can different color Yoshis and you can ride them. Yoshi lays eggs and stuff like that. So Maxwell can get the fire flower, and the fire flower actually shoots out a fireball just like Mario would. So just stuff like that, little cool stuff.
That's cool. And so I've seen a lot of the game so far, like at PAX, and one of the things I really liked about it, it was putting in an arcade game, and then like the game became 8-bit style, or I think it was called handheld game, and they would get lime green, like Game Boy style.
Right.
Like little Easter eggs like that all over the game. Are you worried like some people are going to find stuff like that, that you maybe like bury them too deep?
Oh, never. No ways. I mean, like with fans and the internet, you never bury anything too deep.
Like
somebody's always going to find it. And that's what we want. I mean, there's literally like close to 100,000 words now or something like that, somewhere around there, right? Lots and lots and lots of words. And people just find the most obscure and cool stuff. So, yeah, we put a lot of like really obscure and weird stuff, but people will find it. We know they will. And so they'll get a kick out of it. And what's really cool now is because you can create your own objects and you can actually edit their scripting and edit like how their AI behaves and everything, that you can kind of make anything and share it. So like even if we've missed it or whatever, somebody's going to make it.
And like, what's your favorite object that you got to add to Unlimited?
I kind of like, we put the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse in, and that was kind of cool. So we had Death, because the Grim Reaper or whatever.
Right.
And we brought in his brothers. If they're his brothers, I guess they're his brothers.
So
Famine, War, and Pestilence and stuff. And they all do different things and stuff, so that's kind of cool. They all have their own thing. Like Death obviously kills people. War makes people want to fight each other. Pestilence actually makes people skinny and famished. Or sick, and then famine makes the other way. Pestilence makes people sick, and famine makes people like really skinny and hungry and stuff like that. So just like little things like that, it's kind of goofy and kind of fun. Another thing that we did, we put everything is now has its own gender role. So like, you can write female George Washington or male George Washington, and you get different characters and stuff. Yeah, so just stuff like that is fun.
Man, it must be tough, like, putting all the, like, programming, all those kind of iterations into
it. A lot of iterations, but I mean, we've been doing this for a while now, so, and it's always, we always want to, you know, we don't want to make the same game again, so we want to keep on adding it and really kind of, eventually, maybe 20 years from now, we're just going to make the Matrix by accident, and we're, you know, Fissel destroyed the entire world because the AI is now sentient, but until we get to that point, you know, we just want to keep on iterating, adding new fun stuff, because I think that's what fans like about Scribblenauts the most, is just the creativity and the imagination and stuff.
Cool, cool. And it's coming to the 3DS as well. Is that right?
Yes.
Yes. When's that one?
13th as well.
Well, okay. Well, thank you very much. Yes. And we'll be looking forward to those games.
Yes. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thank you to Jeremiah from Fifth Cell. And let's jump right into reviews. One we didn't do last week. We wanted to do it in a more timely manner, slash we forgot. Halo 4.
Whoa.
Hello.
Halo 4.
Hello.
Hello.
Halo 4 is out. And it is really good.
You liked it a lot.
I liked it. So I
did you finish the fight again?
No. I got the fight started.
Oh.
So just an aside, back in 2001, mm-hmm. I was a GameCube boy. I was not an Xbox fan. I played through Halo at a friend's house in co-op while talking down to him the entire time about how bad of a system it was, writing predictions on the Game FAQ's message board about how Microsoft would eventually admit that it was just a poorly made PC and release a keyboard and mouse peripheral. These are things that I actually did. It's like, you know how politically sides will just like assign random attributes to the other side and use them to kind of like do like ad hominem attacks. That was the GameCube fanboy thing then. Like, the Xbox just shitty PC. So I went with that. So I didn't like Halo 1 that much. It was a good game. I just refused to like it. Halo 2, I actually just didn't like that much. Mm-hmm. Halo 3, I liked, and I liked the other two. And after playing all of them, pretty much the whole way through with all of them except for 2, Halo 4 is my favorite one.
Mm. Hmm. Can you tell us a little bit about why?
No.
Oh.
Yeah, okay. So Halo 4. So Bungie is really a strong developer when it comes to creating gameplay that feels unique. The world of Halo, I mean, it kind of has the general vibe of an arena shooter in like a Tribes kind of game, just in that if you see something, you can go there. It's not a corridor shooter, even if there are corridors. Everything is physical. If you see a giant spaceship, you can probably blow it up. If you see a giant like beetle-like mech, you can probably go inside of it. Everything is actually there. Like, it feels almost like if you see a car, you know someone's driving it. It doesn't feel like they're pulling any punches. Yeah. And the series has always done it well, but what they weren't really good at was compelling characters. Like, I think Master Chief was a good character because we were told he was a good character by characters within the game. Mm-hmm. And he was expanded on in the books and stuff. But as a character, Master Chief was never the strongest.
I'll say they didn't even have like a strong villain, like what one of the froofy heads of the
prophets.
Covenant.
Prophets. Yeah,
prophets, those guys sucked.
Yeah, the characters were never great, and like, was it Anderson? No, not Anderson. What's the Johnson?
Johnson.
Yeah,
Johnson is just stereotype through and through from every war movie. Like, none of the Cortana was kind of a cool character in Halo 3, but they never really were all that compelling. Halo 4, the first thing it does, and I know some people, it kind of Call of Duty's up it just in terms of how much action is in the game, but it does it without sacrificing the fact that you're still walking into gigantic battlefields in the middle of nowhere, these huge arenas that you're fighting in. Doing awesome missions where you're kind of like riding on the back of a giant giant car and then like jumping off to do a huge battle that would be like the centerpiece of any other game, and then just jumping back on your car and driving to the next one.
See, those battles did a great job of like, yes, Master Chief was never particularly a compelling hero, but the Halo games have always made you feel super heroic.
Yeah, like in Halo 3, I think what's the name of the big
Scarab?
Scarab. You have to jump inside of Scarabs, and like the fact that you can like the way I remember doing it in Halo 3 was like riding one of like the Banshees up and jumping out of it and landing on the back of an enemy. It let you be an amazing hero, even if Master Chief was almost not really completely responsible for it.
Yeah.
The other thing Halo 4 does is make Master Chief it explains why he's like that, why he's sort of this not silent but quiet hero, and it pushes him forward and evolves him. It doesn't make him into like a babbling psychopath or anything. But I mean, there's dialogue in the game that's comes out and says like, so Master Chief saved everyone is part of the reason he's such a good hero is because he's essentially a scarred, broken person. Like they assign him attributes that explain why he was, and the events of the game, mainly involving Cortana, just because if you watch any of the trailers, Cortana is 1 year past the point where AIs usually just lose their shit.
She's going nuts.
She's going nuts, and she is sort of the only companion he's ever had. So him witnessing her do that sort of pushes him in a direction that makes him more of a person.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, that's good because in Halo 1 through 3, like, Master Chief never had a moment's peace. Like, he couldn't think about himself or have any exposition or anything. It was just, well, I have to blow up this thing, and I have to now get to the next thing to blow up. Like, he'd have funny little asides of, like, making fun of the Arbiter to his face or something. But
if you look at, like, even the way Halo 3 ends, he is almost addressing himself as a weapon, not as a person.
I mean,
at the end of the game, he just goes, like, all right, wake me when you need me, and then goes into stasis. He doesn't even see himself as somebody who has to live a life.
Yeah, he could have been awake that whole time if he wanted to be, but he was just like, eh. The whole point of the game, too, is you wake up as Master Chief and in the first game, they just go, all right, kill stuff, please.
Yeah, we need you to kill stuff now. I mean, it's
now go to sleep and now kill stuff.
In the books, he's assigned more value than that, but in the games, he's always seen as a weapon.
So I've read several of the books.
Another time.
But even in the books, the thing is, like, he's never really that interesting.
No,
like,
but he's given context that the games never afforded him.
Yes, he is. Yeah, he definitely is.
And this one, by the end of the game, Master Chief went on originally me arguing where he should be even in the top 20 of our best characters list, best heroes list when we did that, to me being totally cool with him being where he is in the top 10.
Now, and the game actually has a real villain in it too, right?
It does.
So Halo lore has always been a mystery to me because I only play the games, which means I don't know anything about the lore. They seem to expect
you to have
read every comic book and every book and every wiki page. Like,
it goes like this, Henry. A long, long time ago, when the Forerunners met the Flood.
I don't know. But there is a villain this time.
Get out of here. Just get out.
There is a villain this time. There's also an entire new race you're fighting. It sets the tone. They're cool.
You do fight the Covenant a lot, right?
The Covenant. Yeah, you fight the Covenant some, but there's a good reason. The Covenant are stupid babbling zealots that just follow the shiniest object. Yeah.
But it's still the Covenant. I'm just tired of fighting the Covenant.
The Covenant have been given graphical overhauls, though. Man. Grunts no longer look like dumb clown monsters.
Oh, yeah. I've heard this is one of the prettiest games of this generation.
It is. Also, game looks and feels a lot like Metroid Prime, if you're a Metroid Prime fan. You get
That's
a visor.
Cool.
You get a
thing.
Visor mode.
That's
that
a good thing.
Just like they gave you, like they did kind of the thing where your HUD looks like it's a helmet.
Oh, that's cool.
More than it did in the last ones. And you even get a visor mode where it's like if you turn that on and the environments you're in on this planet, it's like you might as well be playing a Metroid game.
Not a bad thing.
PvP is really good. They added sprinting, which helps a lot because it was just like a move you could do in the last games.
Oh, yeah. that was so weird.
And they added loadouts and some minor character progression. You can unlock like dozens of armor types. Hmm. I personally have said something that many people disagree with, where I think that some of the weapons that already have the ability to zoom should have iron sights, because it doesn't make sense to me why a pistol would be a full-screen zoom-in. Some people have said that the game's explanation is you're not actually zooming in, that's your helmet mode changing. That doesn't make any fucking sense, and I don't like that. And it's never actually explained in the games really well. So I feel like if you have your pistol, it makes more sense to kind of pull it up. Also, like the fact that when you have a sniper rifle, it just feels like it's I understand that a lot of people are saying, oh, it's an arena shooter. That's like saying they should add iron sights to
Counter-Strike.
Quake. And it's like it's more along the lines of these guns already zoom in. And with exception to sniper rifles, there's no reason why my entire screen should be covered up for when I want to zoom in. Also, the fact that other guns have the ability to zoom in, just the fact that it's like a binoculars, which is something that the series has always had. That always feels weird to me, I guess. Yeah. It's not a deal breaker. I don't even think it's necessarily a bad thing. It's just something everything else about the game has been so Call of Duty-ized. And I feel like this would have made it feel more modern.
Mm-hmm. Warfare?
No, not in terms of making it feel like, oh, it needs to feel like Call of Duty, but just like the pistol is pretty much the only really strong example, but you use the pistol a lot. And the
is
pistol's
it as
always
good
a good
as
game.
It was in Halo
it's
1?
Pretty fucking good. But the game's really good. It's a little the campaign's a little short, especially by Halo standards, and that's kind of disappointing. And the co-op mode they added is like every week you download 5 new episodes. That's really cool. I just want it to be more difficult because you can complete it pretty quickly, even on Legendary with some friends.
Wow.
But it's a really, really good game. One of the best shooters of the year. I gave it a 4.5 out of 5. and I highly recommend anyone who's even remotely interested pick it up.
Well, I reviewed the other big game of the week, though technically it comes out on Sundays in America while the rest of the world has to wait for December. So, yeah. Even Japan has to wait for almost a month.
That's
like, isn't
bizarre.
That crazy?
Yeah, wow.
So, but it is Paper Mario Sticker Star, the new Paper Mario game for the 3DS. And it's an RPG, though they've simplified it a whole lot. There's no magic points, there's no experience. No equipment.
Oh my God.
So it's just you're Mario and you do actions. So how do you do actions? With stickers.
Whoa.
You collect stickers throughout the whole game and each action uses a sticker. It's a consumable item. Like if you want to jump on somebody, you better have a jump sticker. If you want to hit somebody with a mallet or with a hammer, you better have the hammer sticker.
That sounds exhausting to me.
Yeah, it does.
It sounds like it sounds like when I think about when I have like a rocket launcher in a video game and then I'm always afraid to use it, it feels like an entire game based around that paranoia that I'm going to
well,
waste something.
They give you a lot of stuff all the time. Like you're always going to have – you'll have stickers. You just won't have your best sticker all the time. Or like say – like what happens with me is I would get in a fight with three paratroopers, and you can't even hit them with a hammer. And so all I have are jumps, and like I have a rainbow jump, and rainbow jumps are way better than a regular jump. But I don't want to use my rainbow jump on these guys. Do I run and risk taking more damage? Or should I just finish them off and maybe get some coins and spend those coins to get better stickers? Like, it's that, you see.
Do they use the touchscreen to peel stickers off of anything?
No, you hold down the A button.
Damn it.
I know. It seems like a wasted thing, but.
How does it work with no levels? Like, how.
Well, you do.
You get stickers!
Yeah, you kind of, in a move borrowed from Zelda, you do get hearts that increase your HP by 5 at important parts. You'll just find, here's another 5 HP added to my thing. So you do get sturdier as it goes.
Okay.
But also, I don't know. The strategy of it made it a lot more difficult than it sound than I expected, which is good for, you know, usually sometimes Mario RPGs get a little too easy. This made it a lot tougher. And also, it was more of a portable game in that it's not like giant sprawling worlds. They have, it's sectioned off, segmented. Like, there's 1-1, 1-2, 1-3.
Okay.
But don't think that means it's very linear because actually it is not.
It
is. I figured it was linear because the first world is very linear. You can just go 1-1, 1-2, just go straight through it. But then you start hitting these walls of like you don't have the right item to break through this thing. And there's 6 other places you could go to look for that item.
Whoa.
And
oh, geez.
So it's it was way more open. So I know some people and even I had a couple problems with – like, I got stuck for a little while until, like, you have that eureka moment. And I did it without any, you know, guide or anything. But
booyah.
I'm just saying that's why I got stuck. If a guide was out there when I was stuck and after 20 minutes, I would just go, like, screw this. I just tell me where it is.
I want more stickers.
Well, now, don't you just hate when you, like, go to sleep without having solved a puzzle in a game? Like,
yes, especially because like I've been playing Professor Layton every night before bed, and there's some nights where I'll be like, I'll finish this tomorrow night, and then I'll open up my 3DS and see one of those like sliding block puzzles and just be like, motherfucker, I have to do this.
I hate those. Yeah, those are my least favorite.
Swap these two blocks, you fucking idiot, is essentially what the game's telling you.
But yeah, also I want to say that the script is amazing. I love the writing in it. Very well, very good localization too. It has one of, like, I will also say it has one of the funniest moments in Mario history, at least to me. I laughed so hard.
How far into the game is it?
60% of the way through.
Is it going to be like a super deep Mario reference that somebody who might not have played every game won't find funny at all? All right,
That's it. It's still a funny scene, but made funnier if you know the history of the character. I will say that. But,
fair enough. I probably won't get it at all.
It was
then.
A cameo that I did not expect in the least. This character never shows up at any other point in the game. Oh, and another cool thing about the game is, like, Luigi, it didn't seem like was in it. And then you start finding him like Where's Waldo style in these levels.
That's
like,
awesome.
He's like a hidden he's like a hidden thing in the levels.
I have so many games I want to play, and hearing you talk about this makes me want to go home and like lock my door and then just play nothing but this until I fall asleep.
It really is a lot of fun. It's about 20 hours long. Like it's not a huge RPG, but
sizable.
Sizable, yes, yeah, and yeah. So I also gave it a 4.5 out of 5, and I think especially if you're, you know, 3DS is one of your only choices of systems to play this year at this holiday season. Like it's number one, should be very high up on your list of games to play.
Awesome. All right, moving on to the community section. Last week's question of the week.
I can't remember.
Was what game have you ever been really scared by a game?
Yes.
A lot of people pointing out the same things we brought up. A lot of Doom 3s. A lot of Doom 3s. Like half the people.
Was there any Resident Evil 4?
See, and there were some people who didn't want Doom 3 on our best horror games list.
Not a lot of Resident Evil 4. There's somebody saying they weren't scared by the dogs. So let me just read this one. It's J Masala 09. I was not scared by the dogs in Resident Evil, nor the Scissor Man killer in the Clock Tower. The frights came from Pyramid Head, the frights of Pyramid Head and Kayabusa and Fatal Frame did little for me. Siren, Corpse Party, even apparently losing my data in Eternal Darkness didn't frighten me. They only made me really angry. No, what finally got to me was Silent Hill 4. In your apartment, there's a peephole connecting to your neighbor's bedroom. She being a hot game girl and me being an adolescent boy. Well, you can tell that I was checking. The whole time, there was a stuffed rabbit on the bed staring at me from the far wall. And about midway through the game, I returned and gazed through the hole, and it was turned around, staring, pointing at me.
Jesus Christ.
Yes, it did surprise me, but more than that, it creeped the crap out of me. For some reason, I was deeply disturbed by the image and actually stopped playing.
Let me get this straight.
Worse, I refused to feed my pet rabbit for the next few days.
Jesus.
Not because I was afraid of my pet, but because I didn't want to be reminded of the image.
So a guy who's staring through a peephole at a video game is creeped out by
Stuffed rabbit.
Okay. Just, all right.
And he wasn't afraid of Fatal Frame.
Yes. Cody Stovall says, the game I've been most scared of was a moment in Harry Potter 2.
Huh. Awesome.
Where you're trying to avoid the attention of a shopkeeper in Diagon Alley. Diagon Alley.
Learn to pronounce it, you idiots.
In the movie, he mistakenly says Diagon Alley, and then he gets sent to the wrong place.
Oh.
Don't you guys remember that?
He gets shot diagonally into the nearby room.
I was legitimately making a reference, I promise. Also, it's written here. Anyway, said shopkeeper was very spooky, and so were other elements of the game. Also, Resident Evil, Silent Hill, Dead Space, blah, blah, blah. Like Ventiger said Doom 3, a lot of Doom 3s. Cedar Rica said Resident Evil 2. But of all of them, I think we have to go with the person who stopped feeding his bunny.
Yes.
Yeah. That's some deep scarring right there.
Seriously. Yeah, shoot us an email, and you will get a prize. We have a bunch of games to go through. Question of the week this week. Anyone have anything they want to know?
We could play off a feature that went up today, which is favorite boss fights. We could talk about
we
that.
We could.
Or
let's
we
do
could
that.
Go
let's,
with like
let's do
alternate,
that.
Alternate answers that we let's, almost made
I like
the
that one.
Kind of a
I
mix.
Like
let's. All right, so what's your favorite boss battle?
Wait, are we doing alternate and like the ones?
Let's do alternate.
So the one I did in the actual article was this third boss in Shadow of the Colossus, which is an awesome knight. You can read my entry there. But another one that's from the current generation is in the original. I think it's the original Dead Space. For an entire level, you're being told like, "Hey, Isaac, there's a big biological creature somewhere near you." I mean, you'd fought big things in that game. Whatever. I wasn't really that surprised. So I'm going through, and it's like, seriously, this thing's big, Isaac. And I'm like, yeah, I know. You've said that already.
I get it.
When you finally get to it, it's in a hallway that looks almost like it's a hallway that's gigantic, like the size of a skyscraper on its side. Mm-hmm. And the enemy is the entire wall, hundreds of feet across, just stuck to the wall.
I remember that. Yeah,
and
that
you actually walk in, and it's dark, and you just see there's a few lights around, and then the lights flicker and turn on, and they did such a good job with the depth of field, and I was just like, what the f- how am I supposed to kill that? It's the size of 1,000 of me! And that boss was extremely... I just remember being shocked when I saw it. Those are sort of my favorite boss battles. When I see a boss and then I'm like, my initial thought is just like, well, how am I supposed to? That's my personal. So that's my other favorite boss.
I went with Captain K. Rool from Donkey Kong
Captain
Country
Kangaroo.
No, he is not frightening. He's my friend, okay? That's in the article, which you can go read. But a favorite of mine, which was a boss I liked so much that I wished he'd killed me, was Perseus from God of War 2, because I had just seen Clash of the Titans, and the fact that they got Harry Hamlin to do the voice of Perseus in God of War was like, that's mind-blowing, man.
Did he also just do it in Clash of the Titans? Like,
no, he was the original, not the Bullshit Sam Worthington remake. So this was like old-school reference.
Gotcha.
And then he had like the blinding mirror, which was awesome, and I honestly wish he just killed Kratos.
Well, he was the hero
not
in that scene.
Yeah.
Kratos. Yeah. You know, in the article, I put Raphael the Raven, the giant raven boss from Yoshi's Island. Yoshi's Island has a ton of great.
Isn't that boss
lines.
Super creepy, I think?
Yeah, yeah. He's pretty. He has a very vacant look on his face. He just shuffles around with his little feet, and and you run around the moon. It's a gorgeous stage, too. But if I had to pick a counter one, I would go with Gobbleguts from Super Mario Galaxy 2. He's the giant dragon that chases you around. Like, so you're on a planet. He's just flying around you. Just the scope and the size of the dragon in the stage, like, just gets me every time. Like, he's so awesomely huge, and I like his, like, scarred giant chin, and he just looks like a big tough guy. I think he's pretty cool.
He's
shocking.
Like a little orange,
Mario
right?
type. Shocking that both of them come
Mario
from the Mario
has great
series.
Boss fights.
You know what? We've actually talked about this before, but I feel like, and I don't mean to, you will have your turn, Ryan. Okay. I know you're sitting there, you're like, ugh. I feel like Nintendo's insistence on continuing the hit the enemy three times and then it's dead boss mechanic from like 20 years ago ends up undermining the fact that they develop such interesting looking bosses, a majority of which you can beat in under 20 seconds.
That is sort of how I felt a few times playing New Super Mario Brothers U. I was like, all right, another three-hitter, huh?
I feel like Nintendo needs more multi-stage bosses.
I wonder what this boss is secret. Oh.
Yeah. Oh, you have to sit on him three times.
Well, they always save the, you know, like they beat him. I'm not talking anything about New Super Mario Bros. U. I'm talking about previous games. They always save the multi-stage stuff for Bowser. Bowser's multi-stage.
I feel like everyone needs to. I don't know. That's just me, because it's like, and Zelda, too. It's like, man, this boss is awesome, and if you do well, it's over.
They need a Boo that, like, chases you into a corner, and then you have to turn and fight or something.
Anyways.
Except you would hide.
That's
anyways,
a dumb idea.
My alternate choice, and I almost went with this boss instead. I went with Arthas from Wrath of the Lich
King. I like
King.
That.
Anyways, you can read why in the article. But my alternative choice that I almost went with was Sif, the Great Gray Wolf from Dark Souls. Now, this was a boss where you're walking into this, like...
I'm turning your mic off.
You're walking into a wooded glen, and there's, like, this giant-ass tombstone in front of you, and you go to check it out, and all of a sudden, a giant fucking wolf just, like, crawls over the top, like, hey, what's up? And then he hops down, and he carries a goddamn sword in his mouth, like... And he just, like, fucking whirlwinds around. Anyways, that fight for me lasted about 25 minutes, the time that I actually killed him. Like, there had been many attempts... Oh, where I failed, but God. Man, that was one of the most intense fights I've ever had.
Did you scream, yes?
Yeah, I did. I high-fived my brother so hard that he went into a coma and is in the hospital.
His arm shattered.
You were living with your brother even last year?
No, I made that up.
Do you even have a brother?
I do.
What's his name?
Ben.
I don't think so.
Kingsley.
I don't believe you.
Well, you don't have to
We all
me.
Know you. Just a year ago, you were living at home with your parents and your brother.
Now you all know my darkest secret.
That's it for this week. You can check out this. Besides all the stuff we talked about, there's also plenty of other cool features. There's a much more robust explanation of everything from Grand Theft Auto V that's revealed so far.
Yep.
There's article about what your favorite boss is. We hope you comment on that.
The top seven in its entirety.
The top
with
seven.
Maybe your comment in the community choice.
Maybe. You never know. I don't know. Do you know?
Nope.
Well,
no,
you don't. Probably do.
I will.
Yeah, you'll know. There's also... The trivia for Friday is Halo trivia, so if you know a lot about Halo, you can do the trivia.
These ain't easy. You got to know your
no,
stuff.
No, they're not.
And I like that.
Yeah, they're difficult. And plenty of Wii U coverage and other stuff coming in the next few weeks. And also next week we have a few gift guides going up for like... And some of them are a lot more... Some of them are what you're expecting for gift guides. Other ones are just general tips to help you out. Other ones are just us fucking with you. And we're not even going to tell you which ones. How about them apples?
That's the beauty of it.
All right, so we'll see you next week.
Bye. Peace.
Put your cards down.
Why'd you put it that way?
Go. Which is more of a work of art? I went NBA Jam.
So I will say right now that somebody is putting these cards back incorrectly.
Okay. In what
because
way?
Because NBA Jam has come up before.
That's true.
You're usually the one that puts them away.
Usually, but not always.
I think always.
Fuck!
NBA Jam is a work of art. Because it's capturing a moment in time perfectly.
People can tell you're bullshitting right now.
It grabs the – and this is the NBA Jam specifically from 93. You're not going to get a more 1993 game or a 1993 time capsule better than NBA Jam. The fact that they were like, what would be cool in basketball? Well, obviously, if you lit on fire, you were doing so well and then everyone high-fived. That's, to me, why NBA Jam is a work of art. Its cultural significance dictates it as such.
Yeah. Hmm. Mm-hmm. Bejeweled. Okay, so we have crowns in museums adorned with many rubies, emeralds, diamonds.
That is a true statement.
Sapphires, and some such.
You don't need to keep listing them.
Now, when you take those beautiful
pearls,
cut, those
amethysts.
Any precious
what's
stone?
What's the purple one?
Peridots? Is that a thing?
No. Well, yeah, but that's not what I'm
saying. Sapphire?
Thinking.
Tiger's eye.
Tiger's
amber.
No, the one, my birthstone, like the February
excuse
birthstone.
Me, I'm discussing the art
aquamarine?
Of Bejeweled. Okay.
Purple.
Amethyst.
Is it amethyst?
Yeah. It is amethyst.
All right, purple.
I know that from Diablo.
Gives you magic resistance.
I know all of these from like EverQuest. Anyway.
All right, done. So Ryan, you did braid.
Oh, am I really going?
Yeah, go ahead. Okay.
Well,
you son of a snitch.
So braid tells all sorts of magical stories through its interpretive stories. There's the puzzles driven by time, rewinding time and shit.
Sure.
And then there's the ending segment where you go through this whole thing thinking you're saving the princess, only to find out that it's actually when it rewinds, you're like, oh my god, she's trying to kill me.
Spoiler alert, right?
And so. It becomes this really, really crazy.
You just, everyone listening just missed a weird standoffish glare between them where it was like, spoiler alert, I'm obviously joking. And then Ryan being like, I'll fucking kill you.
You're adorable because you take this seriously. You're actually going
I'm listening.
As to why.
And then it becomes this crazy allegory for something that I can't grasp.
What a boring piece of work of art. Archa, if Salvador Dali were to come, is he dead yet?
Let's go with yes.
Okay. If he were to make a video game, he would make the video game Joust, 1982. Because who else would envision a knight in full regalia flying around on an ostrich?
It was actually supposed to be a dragon. It was just animated poorly.
Animated poorly? Doesn't matter. It's still far-fetched, fantastical, and best experienced on LSD.